Welcome here to another episode of Super Powered Pop, here with Dan Tortora. On today's show, we're going to be discussing movies and them being different, them being unique, special. You know, it's so hard nowadays to find movies that are unique, that it's not something that's, you know, a copycat off of something else, something that we've seen, a reboot of something. And in the case of Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, I went to see it this week, and I really honestly thought, you know, I gave this movie an opportunity to kind of be like a Universal Studios theme ride for me. You know, that's how I looked at it. I thought essentially it was going to be a ride for me. It was going to be an opportunity for me to get away from everything that you know, to get away from reality for a little while and really see what this alternate universe could be about, you know. And it had feelings of Star Wars, you know, it had feelings of Tatooine and obviously, you know, traders and whatnot. And by traders, I mean, you know, places where you could trade goods, not traders like, you know, a trader to the military or something like that. But essentially, you know, different things happened throughout the movie. I honestly did. I went there thinking I'm going to like this movie. You know, that's how I went in. You never want to go with a mentality of you want to build yourself up too high, right? You don't want to build yourself up for a letdown. Don't want to get so excited about something and then find out, oh my gosh, it's not that good. So, you know, I didn't do that, but I just had this notion of I want to go see something different. And I really honestly feel like this is going to be a different type of movie. So I think that there's going to be some good in it. You know, I feel like I'm going to like it because there's originality is few and far between. And as you know, with Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, as well as Super Powered Pop with Dan Tortora, you know, being original and unique and special and different is what I'm all about. So that's something that, you know, really it hits home with me that I want you to listen to my show and I don't want you to think, oh my gosh, I heard this somewhere else, or I thought about this, or it was the same type of thing. You know, there no lo mismo, right? Nothing's the same when you look at Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora and Super Powered Pop, part of the overall Universal family of Dan Tortora Broadcast Media, LLC. So, you know, I wanted to see something different. I wanted to see something unique, and I felt like I got that. I thought from Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, I thought the story was really cool, you know? I think graphics-wise, you know, it was pretty good. It made me believe that these worlds actually existed, you know, and that, I mean, Cara Delevingne, I got to give her a lot of credit for being Sergeant Loreline in this movie. I thought Cara Delevingne was great. I thought she played her character very well. She was the most memorable character in it. I thought Dane DeHaan, who played Major Valerian, I thought he was pretty good. You know, he could have been better. It's hard for, I mean, when I see him, he always, I mean, he does, to me, he doesn't look like the hero, he looks like the villain. And I'm not trying to knock him on this. I'm just trying to state the fact that, you know, when I see him in a movie, I think of him as a villain. I think of him in Amazing Spider-Man 2 as the Green Goblin, Harry Osborn, right? And I also, when I think of Chronicle, you know, he's that big villain in it. And when he gets angry, he has that pale face. He's got those eyes, you know, he's got the way that he can kind of just, his eyes turn in and his eyebrows turn in and he just looks menacing. So it was hard for me to think of him as a hero. But Cara Delevingne, I thought she did a great job as Sergeant Loreline. I thought she got the sarcasm down. She got kind of, you know, like the sex appeal, the like, you know, you want me, but you can't have me. So I thought that was really cool. She was definitely a strong woman. She was a woman who was subtle about it. She wasn't like women's rights activist going, you know, crazy over, you know, I'm a woman, but respect me. It was kind of just like, okay, if you respect me or you don't, I'm going to show you what I can do. I'm not going to sit here and scream your ear off about it. I'm just going to go out there and do it. I don't have time to talk about it. I don't have time to talk about women this and women that. I'm just going to go out. I'm going to be me, whether I was a man, woman, child, brontosaurus, donkey, whatever it may be. I'm going to prove to you my worth in what I do. And that's what she did in this movie. I really felt like she captured her character well. And I thought she did a good job. She was the villain in Suicide Squad. And it's so funny because to me, she seems so much older in that movie. And in this movie, there was this like youthful, you know, excitement and sarcasm and adventure and wonder. And I thought that it was really good. I thought it was done well. Clive Owen, as Commander Fillet, he was okay. he was all right, you know. I mean, obviously, you had the notion right off the bat he was going to be a bad guy. You had that feeling. I thought Rihanna as Bubble, you know, this was an interesting take because I felt like there was themes that were kind of put throughout this movie, you know, themes that were kind of integrated that are the bigger picture, that are the real life picture of things. And Rihanna was one of those. You know, she's an entertainer and she doesn't sound like she has a lot of self-esteem. She wants to be told that she did a great job. She wants to know how she did, and she takes it very seriously what other people think of her. And is that not the world that we live in today? So I found that really interesting and compelling that Rihanna was in a role where she essentially made herself vulnerable. And I know she was playing a character, but at the same time, she was on a stage dancing, not on a stage singing, but she is this, you know, she is this being, and her name is Bubble, and she can turn herself into a woman, and the woman that she's chosen to look like is obviously, you know, Rihanna, and she can, you know, change her clothes and shapeshift and do all these things. I thought that it was very compelling. I thought that it really made me sit down and think about it when she wanted to have the approval of Major Valerian. She desperately wanted to know, did you like it? Was I good? You know, and it was sad. It was sad. It was kind of like the life of, you know, those of us in their entertainment world, whether you're a broadcaster like myself or a writer like myself or a singer like Rihanna or an actor like Brad Pitt. You know, we're in a world where we're constantly scrutinized because we are the people out there talking. You know, there's plenty of people talking, but we are the people out there talking. And, you know, we're the ones that are trying to essentially get a feel for life and, you know, give our opinions and give our thoughts and show you. I mean, we're out there to entertain the masses, right? The overwhelming majority of people are not broadcasters. The overwhelming majority of people are not actors and singers. They're not, you know, the overwhelming majority of people are not athletes. So, you know, when you look at our world that we live in, that I'm very proud to live in, it is a highly scrutinized world where you're, you know, if you're out there seeking constant approval from strangers, you are going to be left feeling hollow inside. And I feel like that's how we met Rihanna's character Bubble in this movie. And I thought it was so profound that an actual entertainer in real life chose to play this role where she's hollow and she's desperately seeking approval from other people. And, you know, because in the world we live in today, everybody has an opinion. And unfortunately, you know, people don't spread cheer and love all the time. I mean, people can have an opinion and say, I don't like the movie, but there's a way to go about it. And I feel like the way that people have gone about it in the world we live in today with social media and the bombardment of social media is that, you know, people spread so much hatred and it's okay to come out and say, I didn't like the movie, right? I was not a huge fan of Spider-Man Homecoming. But I don't come out here and say Tom Holland should kill himself. I don't say that the movie was terrible and the director is atrocious and I can't believe that they're allowed to have children and this, that, and the other thing. I can honestly just come out and say I wasn't a huge fan of the movie. This is why I wasn't a huge fan of the movie. And I don't discredit anybody that was a huge fan of the movie because that is their opinion. And there's certain things that I look for in a Spider-Man movie that I didn't get out of this movie. And that's okay. And they don't need to please me. They just need to go out there and do the best job that they feel like they can possibly do. And at the end of the day, I still went and saw the movie. I still gave it a shot. And it'll probably be in my house somewhere because it's my favorite character of all time. So I support the work of all the entertainers out there that are doing things the right way and are working hard to get things done. And why not? You know, how could you not? So I just thought that was really cool that I'm watching the movie and there was a lot of reality in that. There was the reality in, you know, being somebody who so many people quote unquote love, but somebody who doesn't maybe feel loved. And I thought that was really, really an interesting character to have. And I think Rihanna did a great job with it. Outside of that, speaking here about Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets inside of Superpowered Pop, in this episode of Superpowered Pop, we air a new episode every single Friday at noon Eastern Time on superpoweredpop.com as well as on superpoweredpop.podbean.com/mobile. That's Superpowered Pop, S-U-P-E-R-P-O-W-E-R-E-D-P-O-P dot P podbean.com/mobile. Or you could just go on to superpoweredpop.com and you could find all of the links there to download the app and listen into the show and everything. So make sure you do it. You can also search Superpowered Pop with Dan Tortora in the iTunes free podcast as well. So we're on iTunes. We have our own app for it in superpoweredpop.podbean.com/mobile. And you can go to superpoweredpop.com. And that's powered, P-O-W-E-R-E-D. So make sure that you do that. And on Facebook and Twitter, we're at SuperPoweredPop. So make sure that you join us on Facebook and Twitter as well in the discussion that happens inevitably 24/7 when I have a thought that comes to mind, or we write an article, or we do a show, or we shoot a video, or I do the comic book trails and I find a new comic book shop and I do a live video on that, or we do Big Brother Blitz, my wife Kate and I, and you can check that out on the Superpowered Pop channel and SuperpoweredPop.com. So thank you for tuning in to all that we do here with Superpowered Pop with Dan Tortora and company. So getting back to Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, the ambiance, it's something that I spoke about a little bit here. I thought it was different. I thought it was definitely interesting how, you know, I thought it might have a Star Wars feel to it, and it did. You know, Star Wars is known for having all of these characters, so many different characters. I love the opening scene. I love the opening, you know, where we're looking at this space station and it's so small and it's in the past. And then we see it, you know, more recently, and then we see it, you know, at 2021 and 2051 and so on and so forth and in the 2100s. And as time goes by, these ships continue to dock at the space station. And when they dock there, they're greeted, and you know it's humans greeting humans, and then all of a sudden it's all of these alien races greeting humans, and you know there's this giant big bodied thing that has like a fish face inside of water, and you know, and then there's all these different aliens. There's these aliens that look hostile and they look angry, and they put their hand out and they shake hands with you know, obviously the commander of the space station and whatnot. So I thought that was really cool. You know, I thought, again, this is a bigger picture thing about how no matter what you look like or where you come from, that everybody should be given an opportunity and a fair shake. And if somebody looks scary to you, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover. And I thought that was a great opening sequence that, you know, humans were essentially meeting all of these other races, all of these other beings, and they were so different and so unique, and I just, you know, I love the, you know, the thought that somebody was sitting in a room, a team of people were sitting in a room and creating these characters, you know, and when you think about the book that was made, you know, just how they envisioned the characters and envisioning those characters to bring those characters to life and really make them tangible and real. I really thought it was so cool. And like I said, I loved that opening sequence because we saw all these beings. And granted, we didn't see them all throughout the movie, but you know, we got to get a feel for who was on the space station. And the space station was very small. And here it is, you know, humans back in the past trying to figure out a way to calculate and get, you know, get somebody coming through on a space vessel to connect to the space station, be able to come off their vessel peacefully onto the space station and greet everybody. And then you see humans creating this, you know, creating gravity essentially. And once you dock on the space station, they can create this gravity so you're not floating in the space station anymore. It's like you're on Earth. And then they just, you know, every time the door opens to the space station, they're greeting different humans, and then they're greeting, I mean, and that was the beauty of it, is you're seeing people from, like, the Middle East and all over the world, and, you know, people from Asia, and then here's this moment, this defining moment that was so quick, but yet so profound and so beautiful, where here's an alien race, and then another alien race, and another, and another, and another, and another. And we get to see, you know, like I said, the creativity side of it had to be so much fun to be like, okay, we're going to make this big life form that's basically a fish inside of, you know, a fish inside of water, inside of this, like, hazmat-looking suit. And, you know, you see all these different beings, big beings, small beings, floating beings, beings with tentacles, beings that, you know, have, you know, have similar hand like, you know, on, you know, hands on their body or hand like, you know, I have the word for it. So word for, what do you call it? But you know, essentially they'd have like, you know, three fingers or four fingers on it, but obviously it looked like a hand. And I loved it. I loved that the humans put their hand out the first time, and they put their hand out like, you know, shake my hand. This is my way of greeting you peacefully. And then as the alien races came in, it was almost like they spoke to each other, and the one alien race was like, hey, when you get here, you know, this is what we do. And then they were all shaking hands. And then you had that menacing group of aliens show up, and they're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And they just put their hand out to shake your hand. And I thought that was so cool. And like I said, there was a deeper meaning, I think, in the world to that. As far as what the planets look like, you know, there was some beautiful, beautiful planets. You know, or I should say a beautiful planet in Valerian. And the planet that I want to mention here that was in Valerian, I mean, it, you know, the city of a thousand planets, obviously, but the planet that was featured in it was so beautiful and so amazing. And essentially, it was in, you know, in the beginning of this movie. And to see the planet and to really get a feel for this planet and the beings on the planet, the pearls that were on this planet, and, you know, and this planet that was said to be uninhabited, and you knew that there was something going on with it. You obviously knew that, you know, something was getting, you know, that there was some inaccurate information coming from Clive Owen, who was trying to save his own butt because he obviously shot down a, you know, in a battle, he shot down a ship that was right over a planet and, you know, didn't want to admit that they basically caused this mass genocide, which, you know, which was crazy. And I really did. I just thought there were so many different things in this movie that were so beautiful. And I think it's the planet Muir. And, you know, please forgive me if I'm getting that wrong, but I believe that I have it right here. So, you know, the planet that was featured in Valerian that was just absolutely beautiful and just took your breath away. I thought that it was absolutely, you know, I thought it was some very, very pretty, beautiful, unique landscapes. I don't think that it looked fake. You know, I don't think that it was something where I'm watching the movie and I'm going, wow, that's really cheesy. You know, I didn't take that away from it by any stretch of the imagination. You know, I really took away from this that they put a lot of work into it, and it was realistic to me. You know, when we met the pearls and you meet these creatures that can essentially duplicate anything, you know, these translators that can, I said, you know, these, they're like, you know, dogs on the planet, so to speak, but they're really tiny, and they could essentially take anything that you gave them to eat, and they could make more of it. And I, you know, they give back to the earth that gives to them. They kind of were Avatar-esque, you know, beautiful creatures. You know, all the females look the same, all the males look the same, and then males and females look very similar in this movie. But it was so cool. They had their own language. I love that there was no subtitles for the majority of their language, because it was almost like they wanted you, the creators of this movie wanted you to figure out what they were saying. So to figure out, oh, this must mean hello, this must mean how are you, this must mean hello, this must mean goodbye, you know, this must be a sign of respect. So I thought that was really cool that, you know, instead of having subtitles throughout, it was like, figure out what they're saying, figure out what they mean. And that to me was really, really another interesting part of this movie. I just thought this movie had so many, you know, elements to it that made it unique and made it new, because, you know, we don't have subtitles for this new race. We're just thrown onto this planet, and in being on this planet, we're just getting to know this race. We're getting to know what they're about, and we're trying to figure out what their language means. We're trying to figure out what their pleasantries are and what they're saying to each other. And we don't know why they got attacked or who they got attacked by or what went on. You know, we know that obviously the daughter of the of this king, you know, that she loses her life, and that's, you know, an extremely sad part of it. And we see her, you know, right before she loses her life, she spreads her arms out and throws her head back, and we see this blue light just fly right out of her, almost like it's like a line, like a dart, and then all of a sudden it wakes up our character Valerian, and we don't know what that means in it, but essentially, you know, spoiler alert, so if you haven't seen the movie, I'm not going to ruin it for you. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. If you're listening now, I'm going to tell you. She transfers her soul into Valerian, and in transferring her soul to Valerian, she guides Valerian to figure out this huge, you know, this huge plot line, this huge arc in the movie that brings everything that's going on in Valerian's life and Loreline's life all the way back to, I mean, everything that they're doing brings them back to this race, these pearls, and, you know, this group that is desperately trying to recreate their planet and recreate their life. And I think that, you know, we see this, we see it in a lot of movies, that an alien race, you know, humans make contact with an alien race, and we automatically think that, you know, we have to kill them, we have to get rid of them. They're not us, they don't look like us, we don't want to wait, we don't give them an opportunity, just kill them, just shoot them, just do whatever you got to do. And Independence Day Resurgence has that notion of we meet this alien race that comes in this giant orb, this giant circular, it looks kind of like the Death Star, and it's not hostile, and it's not doing anything to threaten humanity and, you know, their weaponry on the moon. And of course, the president says we have to act, and the president of the United States, she acts, and she attacks this thing, and it gets hit, and it goes flying away, and we realize those are the good guys, and they were trying to help and share technology and trying to warn of what was to come. And, you know, so I think that this message in this movie about the aliens and the handshakes in the beginning, and it doesn't matter what they look like, you got to give them a chance and give them an opportunity. It was all of these races were kind, and they had a moral compass. They had values. They had something that bonded them together in a positive way. And, you know, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, this City of a Thousand Planets is just over years what we see in the beginning, which was Guardians of the Galaxy-esque, of just more and more of these vessels coming and docking, and then it getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it was too big and it was threatening Earth's orbit. So it went out of Earth's orbit, and it's functioning at, you know, in space as a planet, but essentially it's just a bunch of parts put together of all of these different vessels that's created this essential planet and this life, which, you know, it's really just a giant space station that is not just international, it's intergalactic. And, you know, so I felt like, you know, you had Star Wars to it, you had Guardians of the Galaxy to it, you had the deeper messages to it, and that made the movie so exciting and so entertaining. And you know, you feel for this race that you don't even know when you're on their planet, and it's peaceful, and it's sweet, and it's nice, and you think another alien race attacks them when you see the ship fall. But, you know, it's humans in space fighting. And this is what the Race of the Pearls say is, you know, the humans didn't even think about us. They didn't think about what was going on. They're going on with their fights over us, and they're not even thinking about us. They're not thinking about they're over our planet. Something could happen to our planet. They could affect and hurt our planet. And essentially, they killed the planet. And I think that was, you know, that's another thing that you don't think about. In Star Wars, you're not thinking about, oh, they're fighting over this planet, and it's going to affect the planet, right? You're worried about, is Rey going to be safe? Is BB-8 going to be safe? Is Poe Dameron going to be safe? You know, is Finn going to be safe? But you're not looking into the fact of going, well, they're all safe, but, you know, they just blew up this planet. Or if they didn't blow it up, they severely decimated this, or people had to have died, or whatever species is on this planet had to have perished to some extent. So, you know, this was like a deeper message of the movie started off by saying these humans are waging war in space against one another, and they're having no care or concern for us. And if there is life down here on this planet. And, you know, they took our lives over something that we had nothing to do with. They were in a fight that we had no place in. We had no quarrel with either side, yet we were decimated the most by this fight. You know, we were the ones that lost the fight the most, but we were never in the fight. And that's a deeper message, because when you're watching Star Wars and you're watching Guardians of the Galaxy and all this stuff, you think about, well, the Guardians saved the day. But you have to also think about how Nova Corps was severely affected by that fight and, you know, and by everything that went on. So, you know, I mean, to me, it brought you more reality to the space fighting and also the deeper message of, as humans fight, innocent bystanders are killed and their lives are affected forever in a fight that they don't even want to be a part of. That was another deeper message of this movie. So this movie was filled with deep, profound messages, which I found to be very well received on my end and very much appreciated. And yet it was this whimsical movie, and you know, this movie that very much was about two characters. It was very much Loreline and Valerian, but there were other supporting characters that were a part of this. And, you know, there was the government, deeper message of this, classified data, not giving information, following orders but not knowing what those orders necessarily meant you were doing, just doing what you're told. And Valerian was doing what he was told, and the commander was doing what he felt was right. And even when he was wrong, it's, you know, take out everybody because that's my call and that's my protocol and that's what we need to do. And, you know, and that's when Loreline says to Valerian, are you going to follow protocol, or are you going to actually look to this race of beings and help them? What's more important to you, being a soldier and just doing what a soldier's told to do, or having a heart and looking beyond being a soldier and knowing that sometimes the plan that you're asked to carry out is not the right one? You know, and that's another deeper message in life. You know, if you have a boss and your boss tells you to do something, do you do it blindly, or do you essentially look at what they're asking you to do and challenge it up against your morals and your value set and say, well, my boss asked me to lie to this person, but ultimately the company is going to benefit from it. And my boss asked me to do it, so I'm just going to do it. Or do you look at it and say, lying is wrong, whenever, wherever, however, whomever, it's wrong. So, you know, this was another moral dilemma for, and this was a big one for Valerian, where, you know, he has always followed the rules. He's always done what he was told to do. Go here, go there, do this, retrieve that, bring this back to this person, help this person take out this thing. And the question that you have to ask yourself is it the right thing to do? Is it always right to just follow blindly and just follow your orders? Or do you question the orders? And if that means treason, are you okay with treason? Because can you live with your heart? Can you live with your mind? Can you live with your soul? And Loreline was this conscience for Valerian, who was, you know, obviously this well-renowned figure and somebody who was, you know, him and Loreline were obviously a duo that meant a lot to the human race. So, you know, to me, they had done things in the past that we didn't even know about, but this movie very easily tells us, hey, these are some important people and they're going to be protected, because the general is constantly trying to protect them and trying to make sure that they're okay, trying to find where they are, why are they there, bring them in, seek safety. But this entire movie, this entire arc of the movie is about, do you just follow orders? Do you just follow something blindly? Or if your gut tells you it's wrong, do you react to your gut and do you do the right thing? Do you dig deeper? Do you just do what you're told, or do you dig deeper to find out what you're being told to do, why you're being told to do it, and what it's all about? And by digging deeper, they saved an entire race of beings and allowed them to create a planet for themselves again. The technology is uncanny in this. It's insane. Big Market was one of the most fun things in the world. Made me think of like Universal Studios, City Walk. And, you know, essentially you have to put these goggles on, you have to be ready, so you can't see anything. You're out in this, like, Tatooine desert, and you walk through this thing that looks like, you know, a metal detector in the airport, and it has all this alien speak on the top of it, and as long as you have a green, like, you above your head, then you're in good shape. If you switch to red, then you're in a situation where you've gone off course. But, you know, big market is thousands upon thousands and thousands of places to buy things, stores. You can't see any of it. You put on these goggles, you walk through it, and then all of a sudden you can see it. You bring it back in this box, and you bring all this stuff back, and then you bring it basically through security or customs, and then you take it home with you. But the crazy thing is, you can't see any of it until you put these special glasses on. And after you put these on, they're really real, tangible things. And then Valerian goes to retrieve something he's made invisible. We see all of this technology that humanity has has come up with, and he's invisible, and he's running through this thing. He takes what he needs, and as he's taking what he needs, he takes the pearl, and he obviously gives that pearl back because the pearl belonged to the pearls. And then, you know, you essentially, you know that he has the translator as well. So, you know, he takes all of this, and he's trying to get out of it. And the crazy thing is, Loreline is right next to him as he's running around the desert, but he's in this, like, simulation that's real life. So she can touch him, she can grab him, she can hold on to him, and at the same time, he's in a totally different place running away from stuff because, I mean, it's going on around him. She can't see it, but he can. So, because he has these goggles on. So he is essentially in this world of the big market, yet he's right next to her. And it's this feeling of helplessness where you can see the person you love and you want to help the person you love get through whatever they're going through. And at the same time, they're still in it. In order to get out of it and take what he needed, he had this thing connected to his arm and it needed to be recalibrated. So he can sit there and he could talk to Loreline, but he's still in this fight while he's talking to her, which is like being in this crazy reality, non-reality, virtual reality game where your life is on the line, yet you look totally fine. And he's got to put his DNA thing into this. He's got to hit it, and then he comes out with what he needed, and he eventually got it. And then, you know, they send this, you know, attack dog alien thing after them. And then we have, you know, kind of, what is it called? The school bus adventures or whatever it was before the television show. I want to look it up right now. Magic School Bus, that's what it was. So essentially, you have this magic school bus type of transportation, and that's like exactly what it looked like. It was this school bus that had alien technology under it. You know, it levitated, it didn't drive, and they're trying to get out of the atmosphere here and take what they need. I love the thing where it's all high-tech stuff. And then I love that moment that happened multiple times. And it was kind of like a moment of comic relief. Is Valerian's talking to Loreline, they're going over the stuff, how do we get here and go there? And then all of a sudden, I think her name is Alex, the ship, he says, Alex, or she says, seatbelts. And while they're talking, they have to lift their arms up and put their arms out, and the seatbelt straps come down, and then they just go about their business. So even in space, you need your seatbelt, which I thought was pretty cool. But, you know, all in all, like I was describing, the technology, the planet, big market, technology-wise, uncanny, insane. It's reality in virtual reality, but virtual reality is your reality. That was the crazy part. They kind of played with your mind, but you somehow understood it. And then, you know, seeing all the alien technology, going to all the different pieces of this Valerian in the City of 1,000 Planets. And this city is the space station, and the 1,000 planets are all of these species that have come onto this planet. And in the middle of the planet, you know, we have the commander make up this whole thing that you know, it's not these people, these pearls that are trying to get their life back, that he's trying to cover up, that he mass genocide, you know, this entire world pretty much, except for these survivors. You kill the survivors, it's like nothing ever happened, except for in his conscience. And he's trying to say, well, you know, this is a dangerous zone. This is a radioactive zone. And when you come down to it, it's not a radioactive zone. They've put up this protective coating that you can walk through, and they're essentially right there in plain sight behind this protective coating trying to create their world again. And they need the translator to do it, and the pearl and all of that. And it's just, The story at the basis of everything, it's about giving back what was taken from somebody. It's about righting the ship. It's about righting the world. It's about righting the universe. And I thought, you know, the movie starts with this Pearl woman passing away, the daughter of the king. And when her soul flies through space, time and space, it hits Valerian and he wakes up. We just think he's having a bad dream or a premonition, but her soul is actually inside of him. And the movie ends with him writing that soul, and then the mother, the queen, taking her daughter's soul out of him after everything is righted and he does the right thing. And so her daughter's soul can now live in peace and move on. So, I mean, the entire movie comes all the way back upon itself, but there's so many things going on and you have no idea what's going to happen. That's what I love about this. It's an adventure, but there's enough of a story to it, okay? It's not like how the Transformers movies are now, where it's just random action and there's no meaning to anything. You feel like you're left without a storyline. You know, Transformers 5 was, you know, the last night. You know, Transformers the last night. It was there was no story. It was action for the sake of action and nothing else. And it was sad because I'm a huge, huge, huge Transformers fan. This movie was about showing us things we've never seen before. These planets, these beings, these species, this International Space Station being the city of 1,000 planets, of all these species working together in this cohesive environment and just being at peace. You have all these different species from all these different planets, and we see movies where any type of alien race comes and goes up against humanity and they want to kill humanity. We see this movie where all of these species meet humanity and are around humanity, and none of them are trying to kill humanity. Humanity's trying to kill the species, the alien species. That's the irony of this whole thing, is that the commander is trying to kill away the species that he almost completely eradicated from history. And humans, well, him as a human, he's the bad one. And he uses the technology of these robots to help him. And all the while, there's a Jabba the Hutt type of character. There's that Tatooine big market. You know, the big market kind of looks like Tatooine when you just see it for the desert that it is. So, you know, there's that Star Wars feel to it. There's a space exploration of any movie where humans go out in space. And then there's all these deeper meanings below it. So, what can I say about it? I think that it was original in a world that lacks a lot of originality. I think that the acting could have been a little bit better on the side of the Valerian character. I thought that Loreline was superb. I thought that Clive Owen's character could be a little more menacing and a little bit scarier. But, you know, I thought the Pearls were, their entire species was so exciting and profound. And when I saw their little translator, their little pet, you know, it reminded me of my little dog, Lily. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, I love it already. And I just want to help it. And when I saw it scared, I thought of my dog. And I was like, I'm going to cry in this movie. So, you know, I mean, it really does. I mean, you see these things that you don't know. You know, 5 seconds before you stepped in that movie, you've never even thought up this thing in your head or drawn a picture of it or had a notion that anything would look like this. Then you're in the movie looking at it and your head automatically goes, oh, so that's like a dog on their planet. Oh, so that's like this on their planet. Oh, so this is how they do this. And this is what this is for. And, you know, this planet that was annihilated by the commander was a planet of tranquility, peace, and utopia, which we say we want our planet to be, but so many people work against that. So, and even if you're a good person and you don't recycle, you're working against it, you know, and so it's, you know, everybody searches for utopia, and utopia was taken away from this group that did nothing to anyone in the universe. And then, you know, utopia is essentially given back to them. And then it's about finding their own utopia with Valerian and Loreline. And you know, I just loved the Star Wars feel of so many different species of aliens, but it was different and it felt different. It didn't look like a Star Wars knockoff. It didn't look like a knockoff of any other movie. It honestly looked like its own standalone movie that took the things that we love about other franchises and movies and put them together and gave us some comedy and gave us some humanity. And so there was layer upon layer upon layer of this International Intergalactic Space Station. And the parallel to that is that there was layer upon layer upon layer of morals and values and a deeper meaning upon meaning upon meaning inside of this multi-layered Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets movie. So my review of it, you know, I'm going to give it a solid B+. And, you know, if they made another one, I would go see it. I thought it was good. Like I said, I thought certain acting could be a little bit better. But as far as bringing me to a world that I can honestly say I've never seen in another movie before, kudos to you, because you created characters and Bubble was great. I thought Bubble was played by Rihanna. That was great that she could not only shapeshift, but she could attach herself to any other being and shapeshift them both. I thought that was like a cool X-Men character that we've never seen before. So, you know, because Mystique can shapeshift, but can she grab onto somebody else and make it happen? So I thought Bubble was a great character. And I thought Bubble spoke to the truth once again, to come full circle, of the life of an entertainer and how desperately seeking approval is not the way to go. But sometimes entertainers feel like they always have to have somebody that says, I love you, I want you around. And you know, essentially, I think that Bubble just needed genuine love from a friend, genuine love from a family member or a significant other or something. And, you know, the self-worth of Bubble needed to come from inside. And, you know, she died a champion in the movie. So, you know, ultimately, I think that the movie had, it had death, it had danger, it had suspense, it had action, it had comedy, it had love, it had deeper meaning, it had morals and values, it had technology, it had, you know, your imagination to the nth degree, you know, and it had that colorful atmosphere of Guardians of the Galaxy. So, you know, I think it took a lot of good pieces that we like, and it's kind of like making a bag of candy out of some good candy that we like. So this had some nonpareils in it for me, some Swedish Fish, some Reese's Pieces, some M&Ms. You know, it gave me a mixed bag of different things I've liked from different movies, and yet it was on its own, you know, and even from like the Alien movies, it had little elements of that too. So, you know, I thought that it was a great thrill ride, and I'm still a huge proponent that they make an actual theme park ride of this, and do it down in Florida at Disney or Universal, and I will gladly ride it. And if you put it somewhere else that I have to travel a little bit farther to, I'm just going to have to make that happen. But, you know, preferably Universal or Walt Disney World, probably Universal is where it'll end up. But, you know, it was a lot of fun. It was a good movie. And as much as I described to you this reality, non-reality, big market, what does it mean? As much as it may sound confusing, I did not sit in this movie turning my brain on at all. I wasn't like, okay, break from the movie. Got to turn the brain on for a second. What does this mean? Let me decipher this. Because I've sat in movies before where I can't figure something out, and the movie continues to go, and I'm trying to play back 15 minutes ago, an hour ago, like I did in Transformers the last night, and say, well, how did this happen so easily, and why are we here, and what is this, and how did this connect? In Valerian, they're showing me all this new technology, all these new alien races, everything that's going on, and I'm following the story, and I'm going, never seen it before, but I buy it. I dig it. I believe that it's possible. It made a day at the movies fun. And it as much as it asks you to open up your imagination and just throw it out against the wall and look at all of it, it didn't make you overthink it. And I thought that was really cool. So, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, solid B+. This has been an episode of Superpowered Pop with Dan Tortora. Superpowered Pop is always available on superpoweredpop.com for the shows, as you know, the archive of the shows, as well as videos, social media, and so much more, including articles. You can buy t-shirts on there of Superpowered Pop from anywhere in the country or the world. So definitely go out and do that. Superpoweredpop.com is always on. Superpoweredpop.podbean.com/mobile is where you download the free app. You can also do that on superpoweredpop.com. You can search for Superpowered Pop with Dan Tortora in the iTunes free podcast. And you can get us on Facebook and Twitter at Superpowered Pop. So thank you so much for tuning into today's show. Kudos and congratulations to Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. I thought it was good. And I thought for nothing else, the ambiance was wonderful. So it was a movie that didn't try to be Star Wars, still gave you a Star Wars feel, gave you Guardians. I went into the movie thinking I'd have fun, and I came out of the movie having more fun than I thought that I would have. So that's good stuff. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, I recommend that you go to see it. Solid B+ from us here, right here at Superpowered Pop. And I want to thank you for listening in. Every Friday at noon Eastern Time, a new show airs. And, of course, our sub-show, Big Brother Blitz, which is dedicated to the CBS reality show Big Brother with myself and my wife, Kate Tortora, that airs every week as well. So thank you so much for tuning in. We'll talk with you very soon on Superpowered Pop with Dan Tortora.